Feliciano versus the Department of Transportation, 2022-12-19. Good morning, Mr. Lawler, when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Brian Lawler on behalf of the petitioner Nick Feliciano and subsequently the petitioner Charles Flynn. I'll defer to the Court if the Court would like to ask questions about both. I don't think I'm going to have anything different to say, but procedurally I suppose I can speak and then government counsel can speak, then we can do Flynn after.
You have different government counsel in these two cases.
Yes, sir. I'm aware of that. My opening would sound remarkably like Mr. Marshall's opening for the Nordby case. What we're talking about here is 5538, and as the Court has now heard quite a bit.
Can I just ask you factually again about the type of training your client was called to duty for in this case?
So Mr. Feliciano was a Coast Guard reservist, is a Coast Guard reservist. He went to the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. He was doing counter-drug, counter-human smuggling operations during his active period. So, I mean, I think when if we're looking to the nexus between what the reservist or guardsman or woman is doing, I think it's pretty easy factually that Mr. Feliciano was
what statutory provision was
12301D, Your Honor. He was under 12301D orders, as the vast majority of reserve and guard personnel are when they're activated. And I'd like to perhaps help enlighten the Court respectfully with how reserve and guard personnel are activated and ordered. And I think 5538 and the holding in Adams, which we also believe is incorrect, Your Honor. I know it's difficult to stand here and tell you that after you wrote it, but we don't agree with Adams. We think it is wrong. We think the Court got it correct in O'Farrell.
I'm a little confused why you see inconsistency between the two when O'Farrell explicitly recognizes that not every reservist called to active duty gets this type of pay.
That's exactly right, Your Honor, and that's what I wanted to kind of help enlighten the Court. So of my 28 years in the Marine Corps, 17 were in the reserve component. What Note 5 and O'Farrell would exclude are drill weekends, IDTs, and active duty for training periods, annual training. And you know, as the Court knows, in Adams, I was Mr. Adams' counsel as well, which the Court probably is aware. We didn't even raise the issue on appeal of the denial of differential pay for the annual training, which is a two-week requirement that almost all reserve and guard personnel do, because that would fall under Note 5 of O'Farrell. That wouldn't be subject to differential pay. So we recognize that 12301D, being a provision of law, every reservist, Your Honor asked Mr. Marshall, is it your position that every reservist called to orders under 12301D is going to get differential pay? That's exactly our position. And Note 5 and O'Farrell would exclude those periods I just mentioned, drill, annual training, other IDTs. There are other ways that reserve and guard personnel come on active duty and get paid, but those would not be subject to 5538 differential pay. But it is our position that if you're on 12301D orders, which is voluntary, sometimes voluntold, but voluntary, at least for the statute, every one of those orders would qualify for differential pay.
And that's because of the argument that the statute in O'Farrell explicitly has the in support of contingency operation, and 5538 just cross-references contingency operation.
Yes, sir. And I would go further to say that in the analysis that this Court did in O'Farrell, it parses out, it discusses Mr. O'Farrell's relationship. You know, he's indirectly supporting because he backfilled for an attorney who went forward to Afghanistan. But then the Court goes a little further and says, but that is sort of immaterial because he's called to, this is Mr. O'Farrell, called to active duty under a provisional law, 12301D, during a time of national emergency. And that's one of the last holdings that this Court had in O'Farrell. That requirement, again, we've been talking about the cross-reference, isn't in 5538. And I would humbly submit that when this Court defined contingency operation, it simply took the or any provision of law after the, you know, after the comma in 101A13 and said that is the contingency operation. So it's a little circular, but we keep saying contingency operation, but this Court's already defined it using the catch-all provision. So that's where we are. But such a requirement doesn't exist under 5538. And the reason I respectfully disagree with Adams is it went further than O'Farrell just requiring any sort of indirect support, didn't need to show the operation that it was being supported. the Adams Court said directly called to the operation. So without defining that further, and candidly, both as an attorney and as a career Marine, I didn't even understand what that meant. Like, what directly called to serve? It didn't really resonate. I thought the court's analysis in O'Farrell, albeit with a different statute, was correct, and respectfully, Adams is not. And we too would under Rule 35, request that the panel refer to en banc. Yes, sir.
Yeah, assuming we are bound by Adams and we don't go en banc, or at least the three of us are not en banc at the moment, how, if at all, can you prevail in this appeal?
I mean, if, under Adams, I don't think we can. We would certainly welcome being remanded and being able to open the factual discussion.
You haven't asked for a remand, though, at least in your briefing.
Right, and the reason we didn't develop the factual record was Mr. Feliciano's record closed prior to Adams at the time. The controlling law was, if you were on 12301D orders during a national emergency, you were going to get the differential pay. That decision took almost a year to come out, during which Adams happened, so we didn't develop the record because we didn't have to.
Couldn't you have petitioned to reopen the record after Adams was issued?
I suppose we probably could have, yes.
Are you asking us to... I guess you're not asking for a remand, so I don't have to think about why you didn't.
Well, we're not asking for a remand because, candidly, we don't want to go back down if Adams is still controlling, because I don't know that he went, or any other reservist under 12301D. I mean, OPM's guidance, which was adopted by the Adams Court, pretty clear that no 12301D orders, no voluntary orders will ever qualify for differential pay. That's not... Thousands and thousands of reserve and guard personnel get activated under 12301D and go forward and go into harm's way. That's just a simple fact. But under Adams and...
Your friend before you referred to the amicus briefs of a number of members of Congress who clearly disagree with Adams. Has there been any movement since Adams in Congress?
Legislatively?
Legislatively.
I don't know the answer to that. I would like it to be, but I don't know the answer to that question. I think just one piggyback, and again, I'm trying to avoid repetition here, but when we discuss Congress knows what it writes and writes what it knows. I mean, 6323, the additional paid leave statute that was at issue in O'Farrell, enacted in 66, amended most recently in 2004, the impetus for 5538 started in 2001. 6323 says in support of contingency operation, 5538 doesn't. It would be, I think, clear that as those two statutes were overlapping, if Congress wanted to put in support of contingency operation.
Well, can I just ask you the same question I asked your friend before you? If Congress was really just concerned about the differentials between civilian and military pay, there was a lot easier way to do this, wasn't there? They could have just said, you always get a differential when you're called to active duty or you're called for reserve duty.
And respectfully, I think that's what they did do. I think that's what 5538 reads.
I mean, but it's a really complicated way of doing it.
I agree with that.
If that's what they admit, all they would have had to say is when you're a civilian employee of the federal government and you get called to reserve training under whichever statute, the D one you're referring to, you get differential pay. Full stop, right? That's all you require instead of what 5538 says now, which is a fairly convoluted language that then refers to cross-references contingency operation, which is also fairly convoluted.
Your Honor, I agree with everything you're saying, and I wish Congress acted differently and wrote statutes that were more simple and easy to interpret. I agree.
I mean, I understand your position. It's just it's hard for me to parse the statutes in the same way you do when they cross-reference a definitional section and say they only meant to apply part of the definition, not all of the definition. When they could have made it much clearer and much more simple.
I agree with the way Your Honor wrote that statute. If that's how 5538 read right now, I don't think we would be here. I don't know that I have anything to add with respect to Mr. Feliciano.
I guess there's just the issue you've already alluded to, but I want to make sure I understand. It took the board a while here to write its opinion. Are you contending that's an abuse of discretion?
We absolutely contend that, Your Honor. Yeah, I mean, it was
and on what authority could we find that's an abuse of discretion?
I don't have any, Your Honor. There's no.
Isn't it harmless anyway? I mean, if Adams is controlling, Adams is controlling.
Adams would not have been controlling had the administrative judge issued that opinion in 6 months or even 9 months, but she took a year, and in that year, which...
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true. I mean, O'Farrell was a different provision. Adams could have come up, you know, your case could have come out the same way as Adams.
I respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor. I mean, I've had dozens of these now, and every AJ, I had Marquise, which was 2015, before O'Farrell.
I mean, I think trying to predict what the AJ would have done is difficult, whether the government would have petitioned for review under the OPM, you know, director petition for review. I don't think you can say full stop that your client would necessarily.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying that.
Well, that's pretty much what you have to show for it to be prejudicial, don't you?
Thought it was worth raising to the court's attention.
Do you think there's anything wrong in an agency deferring a decision when it knows that a higher tribunal is evaluating a similar issue or the same issue?
Are you suggesting that's what happened in this case, Your Honor? I don't think I understand the question.
I thought your brief was implying there was something wrong in the agency waiting until Adams was decided.
The administrative judgment, I'm sorry. I was interpreting that to mean the government.
Sorry. Right.
We are implying that. We're actually saying that. I mean, I think it, and I do think
that's
that,
only sensible and reasonable, isn't it? If you know the issue is going to be decided by a higher tribunal.
If Judge Pomeranz knew that Adams was up and being considered and was waiting on those grounds, then yes, I would agree with that. I don't know that that's true. That's completely speculative, like Your Honor just pointed out. How would that case have come out? Did she know that Adams was up?
I mean, you pointed out, I mean, the board does have, you know, time deadlines that it's supposed to comply with. Could have asked the full board, and I know the board didn't have a quorum probably, but that's, you know, part of the issue. But you could have at least asked for the AJ to comply with the time deadline. Did you?
After the record closed and before she issued her opinion? No, Your Honor, we did not. So, absent any further questions about Mr. Feliciano, I'll sit and presume that there will be something about Mr. Flynn.
All right. Well,
thank you, Your Honor.
See you later. Mr. Long.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I think Adams controls here. I think we've explained why that is, and as my friend Mr. Lawler has noted, he can't win under Lawler, and I think that, I'm sorry, he can't win under Adams, and I apologize. I think that disposes of that. Just with respect to some of the procedural points, that I think Judge Stark was asking about. After the initial decision was issued, one basis for a petition for review would have been for Mr. Feliciano to say that he was able to meet the factual requirements of Adams in the reopened record in order to make that demonstration. He didn't make that motion, or he didn't make that petition. And so I think that, and obviously Mr. Lawler has conceded that, and that disposes of that. He didn't attempt to make the showing that is required. And also with respect to the timing, I would just point out that Mr. Feliciano's appeal at the MSPB was complicated and brought up a lot of issues, many of which have not been raised here on appeal. And so I don't know the exact reasons for the administrative judge's timing, but it was a complicated case that required digestion of a fair bit of hearing material and evidence. One other point I'll make, I would just...
Is the board's time deadline for deciding these cases for AJs, it's just in the regulations, isn't it?
Or
is it in the statute?
I'm not sure whether it's in the regulations.
I know that AJs probably get their performance evaluated based on compliance with, what is it, 180 days?
I think that may be right. I'm only thinking of the regulation that Mr. Feliciano cited in his opening brief, which was not applicable to DOT employees. And so that's all I have in mind. I'm not sure what other limits there might be on their ability to, or time requirements there might be.
I mean, I'm just thinking of generally when there are time deadlines, unless Congress has made it clear somehow, they're often more, you know, encouraging rather than rendering the agency action invalid.
Right. Yes, I don't have the regulation in mind, but I think that's generally right. And as was discussed with Mr. Lawler, I'm not sure what the prejudice would be here. I mean, I'm not aware. He has not pointed out any case law for the proposition that an intervening decision from this court somehow can effectuate prejudice and render it improper at the length of time that it took. One final point I'll make is my friend Mr. Lawler said that this court, I think, adopted OPM's guidance. I think that's a slight misread of Adams. This may not be the most important point, but I think the court viewed OPM's guidance as consistent with its own reading, which is a little bit different from saying that the court relied on it or incorporated it.
On that point, then, does the government have a position as to whether 12301D voluntary service, voluntary activation, essentially, or activation with the consent of the reservist, is per se not a provision that allows for eligibility for differential pay?
I don't...
Because that's what OPM says, right?
Yes. I don't think that Adams stands for that proposition. I think that I read Adams as holding that there could be a showing that a reservist was called to directly serve in a contingency operation under 12301D, and that a factual showing at the board would suffice to make a demonstration of entitlement to differential pay. I realize that that's different from what the OPM guidance says. I don't think this is the case where we need to resolve that precisely, because Mr. Feliciano is only saying that the existence of the national emergency arising from September 11th at the point when he was called to active duty, that was sufficient. And I think Adams completely disposes of that argument. And we can deal with what connection might be required in perhaps another case. If there are no further questions, we respectfully ask that the court affirm the board's decision.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Lawler, do you have any rebuttal?
I do, Your Honor. Thank you.
With respect to the question about timing, I don't have the regulation number. I believe it's 120 days, though, Your Honor. I think that's right. I certainly could be wrong, but in the board's regs, it does indicate when the case should be fully disposed of. And the AJs suspend them quite often, suspend case processing quite frequently. In fact, Mr. Feliciano's case was suspended 3 or 4 times because he was back on and off orders.
I suspect that's because it's tied to their performance evaluations, which may affect their potential qualification for performance bonuses.
I do want to bring something up that we haven't talked about, and it's USERRA specific. I mean, we're talking about these two statutes, specifically 5538, but 6323. But I feel like we're losing the macro a bit in USERRA, and my colleague, Mr. Marshall, in his rebuttal remarks, talked about the broad interpretation, King, and that. But what I think is important is the current status of the law, if Adams does in fact control is, and OPM's guidance is promulgated, is that voluntary service does not receive a benefit of employment, but involuntary service does. Those two conflicting holdings themselves conflict with USERRA. USERRA is very, very clear that it protects benefits of employment for all types of service, voluntary and involuntary. So if we have one, and I think we cited in our brief, two service members get activated, one under 12301D, one under 12304, and they're in the same foxhole, in the same cockpit, or on the same ship. One of them is going to get differential pay and one of them is not. That simply cannot be the right result. Obviously, there's no evidence before this court of how many people, service members, are activated under 12301D and who would ultimately be deployed. But if it's 12301D, it's still voluntary. And again, I respectfully disagree with what my friend Mr. Long said.
Don't think Adams leaves open the possibility of getting activated under 12301D but being deployed in a contingency operation.
So we think it forecloses 301D, but I understand that the language is a little...
I don't think that's what Adams says. Okay. Obviously, you can read it and come to a different conclusion. I mean, because the opinion is what it says now, right. Not what anybody happened to intend by it.
Right.
But it seems to me that because it was following O'Farrell and talking about in support of contingency operations, that if somebody got called to serve in a unit
you know, in the military theater, even if it was under 12301D, they would qualify.
Directly called to serve, right. I understand that. And again, we pointed out that...
So why wouldn't that take, you know,
well, I guess,
account of your inact or your voluntary versus involuntary status? Does anybody get... Sorry, I don't mean to take up too much time. Maybe we'll save it on the next time.
But I have a whole other case.
Does anybody get called to involuntary duty for just routine training?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. My guess is that probably yes. I mean, we've all been called at various times to do things that the DOD says we have to do. But the vast majority of this pot of money, if you will, 12301D, I mean, the enumerated statutory provisions that are in 101A13 and then 12301D, those really, if you take a half step back, those are just pots of money, right? Yes, there's different statutory authority under which those orders would be executed, but they're really just pots of money, and 12301D happens to be the biggest pot of money. That's how we get to the all-volunteer force. It incentivizes an all-volunteer force. I mean, obviously, it is an all-volunteer force, but it incentivizes people to continue to serve in the reserves and the Guard, where they can go on voluntary duty for whatever they need to do and still be assured of receiving this differential pay. I understood Your Honor's point very clearly that, you know, the post-enactment legislative intent isn't really legislative intent, but there's really not much dispute that the intent of 5538 was to provide differential pay to any reservist or guardsman or woman anytime he or she is activated, with those exceptions that I pointed out earlier, drill, AT, and IDTs.
Mr. Lowell. You might sit down and change your, open a different notebook, and if, government counsel wants to change seats, they can, but needn't if they don't want.